This is the Cornerstone Companion Podcast with me, your host, Dr. Vic McCracken, Assistant Professor of Theology and Ethics at Abilene Christian University. This podcast features interviews of ACU Cornerstone Spotlight speakers, students, and some outside voices. Thank you for listening in. Today I visit with freshman students from the fall 2010 Cornerstone class and invite them to reflect on their Cornerstone experience. Students, I want to welcome you to the studio. How are you all doing?
Good.
I want to begin by having the five of you just introduce yourself to our audience. Tell everybody your name, where you're from, and if you have a major, I'm interested in you sharing that as well.
I'm Megan Lawrence. I'm from Seattle, Washington, and I'm a psychology major.
I'm Tamina Jordan. I'm from Fort Worth, Texas, and I'm a biochemistry pre-pharmacy major.
My name is Morgan Ashbrook, and I'm from Tyler, Texas, and I'm an elementary education major.
I'm Melissa Stanley from Dallas, Texas, and I'm an interior design major.
And I'm Eric Solik from San Antonio, Texas, and I'm an accounting major.
All right, thank you. Well, welcome to the studio. This is our last week of Cornerstone. Can you guys believe it?
It's crazy.
Went by way too quick.
Went by fast. Yeah.
Well, this week in Cornerstone, Dr. Strawn kind of did a wrap-up where he tried to pull some of the threads of our class together and help us maybe recapture the big picture of Cornerstone that it's very easy to lose sight of amid the week-to-week grind of a semester. So what I'd like to do with you guys today is give you the chance to give me and just other people involved with Cornerstone to give us some feedback on your experience in Cornerstone and some of the things that stuck with you, some of the questions that you're still thinking about. So let me begin by opening up. I'm going to have all of you answer this first question. So the question has to do with our spotlight lectures. We had each Monday in Cornerstone, we all attended and listened to one spotlight lecturer give some kind of lecture related to some topic. I want you to each share with me one spotlight lecturer that made a real impression on you. Megan, why don't I start with you? Go ahead.
I really enjoyed Dr. Gentry's lecture on othering. And I talked about that in my speech a little bit, but just the fact that just how we view others and how we create others, I was able to take that speech and then put it into my everyday life. And so,
how so?
I think just it changed the way that I viewed others and changed the way that I thought about others. And so I realized that I shouldn't be creating others, but I do. And so even just going home like this weekend for Thanksgiving, I was able to see people that, like at church, everybody wants to come say hi to me because I've been gone. And some people I'm not always, like, they're not my favorite people to talk to. But because of that speech, I started thinking, you know, I need to have an open mind to talk to these people.
Uh-huh. So, interesting. Mm-hmm. Good. Tamina, how about you?
My favorite was Dr. Reese, and hers was over decision-making. And I talked about that in my speech as well. It, like, connected with me. Like, I stayed up the whole time. Like, I was listening, and she basically said that, like, it's God's will, plan to find, or path to follow. And with me, like, being here at ACU and stuff, I just didn't know why I ended up here. And, like, when she spoke and stuff, and I was like, I finally realized, hey, it was His will. And it helped me, like, with decision-making and stuff. Like, I'm so indecisive about stuff, and I learned that, hey, I don't have to go through this by myself, you know. I mean, follow God, you know, trust in Him, and like He'll put me where I need to be.
Uh-huh.
So, I loved her speech.
Good, thanks, Morgan. How about you?
I really enjoyed the lecture from Dr. Moore and Dr. Shilkut, not just because of the dancing, but because of just the way that they shared their personal views with each other and how they were so different, but yet they found ways to bring them together. And that really has affected me coming here with the diversity between all the different students and just adapting to college life, just getting along with everyone and celebrating your differences and your similarities.
Uh-huh, good.
Dr. Campos stuck out most to me, the walking in your shoes. Just seeing how, like, every person comes from a different background in life. Like, normally I'll walk down the street and I'll be like, Muslim, Christian. But, like, getting to sit there and, like, see the different makeup and who they are and where they've come from, it's, like, really, it's kind of, like, stuck with me. And then, was that the immigration?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like, you normally you'll see somebody and you'll be like, nah, it's a Mexican, whatever. But just like sitting there and being like, they ran away for a reason, they've escaped, like, we don't know where they've come from and they're looking for a better life. I mean, it just kind of changes how I think. And I'm not sitting there being like, oh, okay, cool, it's a person. It's like, they are a person, they're human, they're created by God, and I should treat them as a creation of God, mm-hmm. kind of, so.
Good, good. Eric, how about you?
My favorite was Professor Rankin's about, does technology unite or divide us, and which is why I did this for my speech. I'm a big technology person. I love everything innovative and just new. But I liked how he showed two sides of the technology, how, in a sense, it sort of can divide us when he shows the video of, like, the mass producing of the chicks and the chickens, and then he showed the other side of how it was how technology was used to unify these four corners of the world, all these people on YouTube who individually they wanted to say, look, world, this is what I can do, but the one man turned it into, look, world, this is what we can do. And just unintentional unity that kind of opened my eyes to an aspect of technology I never saw before. I would just see it as a Palm Pilot or an iPad or a laptop. But then now I look at it as, oh, well, this can be used to reach out to this people, or this can be used to reach out to this group, or anything like that, and it actually just kind of like changed the way I look at everything. Just kind of blew my mind, but I really enjoyed it.
Good. What's interesting to me that I have five of you, and not all of you chose to be in this session. Some of you I just placed here because I needed to make certain that I had a group of five students here, and it's interesting to me that each of you chose a different lecture as one that really kind of stood out to you. I don't think that was planned either, was it?
No.
That's good. Well, Megan, you already had kind of pointed to one very practical way that you have seen kind of your experience in Cornerstone playing out with the way you kind of engage people at church. Let me open it up to all of you. Do you see other ways that some of the things that we've looked at in Cornerstone this semester may have affected or even altered the way that you are thinking about things?
I say yes, especially with the other ending. I like that one too as well. I've always considered myself as an other, I guess, because I'm an African American and I grew up kind of in a predominantly like Caucasian neighborhood and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've always like nobody was racist or anything toward me or prejudiced, but I've always looked around and I'm maybe only like the only African American kid in the class, and I was like, I'm so different and I don't like it and stuff. But at the same time, you know, you have to flip the script, like different cultures, you know, people also, they're others too, you know. I had to notice like I'm not the only other, so that really did kind of like stick out to me, because I always thought, hey, it's just me, but it's really not, it's different groups.
Tamina, you talk about your experience of feeling like another in your high school experience.
Mm-hmm.
Have you felt something similar coming into Abilene Christian University?
Yes, I have, because, again, we're predominantly at a, you know, Caucasian and Caucasian college, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's the same thing. But with the spotlight speaker, when they spoke, it just, like, it stuck out, because I'm not the only other here. I mean, it's different races and stuff here, and... Mm-hmm. Everybody's another. I mean, whether you go to Church of Christ,
uh-huh.
or you go to like, you know, music church or Baptist. I mean, everybody's another, and so it just stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting that you draw from something that's part of your identity, the fact
yes.
that you are African American, and that affects your experience of the world, and you know, I think that's one of the important lessons that Dr. Gentry is inviting us to think about, that there can be ways that we can see that as a negative thing,
mm-hmm.
and we can demonize or denigrate mm-hmm. people because of difference, or we can value diversity.
Definitely think as a positive thing. Of course, you have to just being around people that are different from me, you know, and it just makes me more of a well-rounded person, actually, and other people too, because if I'm always around people that are like me, I'll never understand other different kinds of people. So I consider it as a blessed experience.
Mm-hmm.
So
good. How about others? Are there other ways that you've seen yourself asking new questions or even living differently because of some of the things that you've learned in Cornerstone this semester?
I know for me, my views have actually changed almost like a 180, or yeah, 180, because 360 is the same thing. from August, when we first started the class, a couple weeks into it, we talked about are we a melting pot or a salad, if I remember correctly. And I remember my answer was, after being in the class for a while, my answer was, well, for me, it's kind of in the middle, because yes, we're all different, but I don't necessarily think that celebrating each difference is a good idea. I don't know if I got mixed reactions and everything, but mm-hmm. Now, like, when I walk down the street or to class or anything, instead of just kind of keeping to myself and just saying, oh, well, I don't know, we're all different, I guess, whatever, we're all human, whatever. I see everyone as different individuals, but at the same time, I see them all as the same person. It's kind of weird. I don't know how to describe it. It's just, like, I don't know.
Well, if we play off of that metaphor, recall, what does it mean to say that we live in a melting pot? What does it mean to be a melting pot culture?
To me, a melting pot culture is just saying that all of us are just blended into one unified culture. We're all one person, one thing. There's no difference. And then the salad view was we're all different. Everyone has their own difference, and then we celebrate that, and we make sure that everyone knows where the differences are. Then my answer was not really celebrating it, but still realizing that we are different.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of both each of those metaphors can mean something mm-hmm. different about what we should do with difference, right? If we see ourselves as a melting pot, then the goal of a human community is to take our differences and blend them all together mm-hmm. so that, in a way, our differences almost disappear into one flavor. But a salad vision of human community is one that says, no, what we do is we celebrate the uniqueness mm-hmm. of each person. And that means something quite a bit different when you think about how we educate people, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. So I see you still kind of wrestling.
Yeah, I'm still
which
trying
one
to
do
figure
I...
it out.
Yeah, good.
But I don't know, like, this course to me is a way of analyzing ourselves, our behavior, and so after just kind of figuring that out for myself, as I see other people responding to questions and reacting to different situations, it just kind of helps me try to figure out exactly who I am and what I do.
Uh-huh. So. Good. Any other questions from other members? Anything that you're still kind of thinking about after this semester?
I really loved our discussion on women's role in the church.
Uh-huh.
And I really think that we had, in our class, we had an open discussion. Some of the guys were a little scared to talk. Because some of
I was one of them.
Some of the guys, meaning some of the men?
Yes, some of the men. Yeah, that would.
I liked that discussion, too.
Yeah, but I think that we still didn't reach a conclusion. And I see, like, when I'm back home in Seattle, it's very... I guess it's more of an urban culture, and so women in the church is more common, but I'm more of a reserved person where women have their roles, and they have certain roles that they also shouldn't be in, I think. But my friends up there think that that's weird because I'm that way. But then down here, I felt like there were more people that agreed with me, but then it was that awkward, which one's right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still struggling with that, I think.
That's good. And that's interesting. And for those who are listening to this podcast, mm-hmm. of course, not all of them were in our specific Cornerstone section. But yeah, that conversation that we had about women and gender in the church, you know, remember looking at the quote from Tertullian, a Christian thinker from, second century, talking about you know, women and what they can't do. That was primarily the focus. He wrote a treatise called On the Veiling of Virgins. And mm-hmm. And so that elicited a lot of reaction. Were any of you uncomfortable with the fact that we ended that class and it was clear that people in the class did not all see eye to eye on that issue?
No, I thought...
Were you okay with that?
I was okay with it. Uh-huh. I mean, because sometimes you have to agree to disagree. And I didn't agree with how they said that women can't play bigger roles in churches. Like, I still don't agree with that. I mean, I've seen a couple women preach, and I love the way they preach. You know, there's just a different outlook on things, and I don't know. You have to agree to disagree. I like the different opinions and stuff, and I still don't get that. And I don't, you know, there is no conclusion to that. In my opinion, I think women, if they can do anything, anything that a man can do, a woman can do. I mean, if they're good at it, then why not? Mm-hmm. If they're going to preach the word of God and deliver it in a good way, then why not? So.
And, of course, you recall that there were people in the class that did not feel that way, right?
Exactly. But it's okay. I mean, I got a, you know, different outlook on it.
That's right. So I think what I appreciated that I got from you in that class is that all of you felt like your responsibility in that conversation was not to hide from the disagreement, but to be direct in trying to state in a clear and compelling way the way you saw the issue at that moment. And I think that's another lesson that I hope that you take from Cornerstone, because the issues that we pursued in this class are the kinds of big questions that you're going to be wrestling with throughout your career at ACU. And I think that I would be disappointed if the conclusion that we all reach is, well, we all disagree, so there must not be any answer, right? All of our goals, ultimately, is to arrive at a deeper, better understanding of what is true, right, and good. And we might change our mind about what that is, but we don't absolve ourselves of responsibility, right? And it's easy to do, to absolve ourselves by just saying, well, whatever you believe is what you believe, what I believe is what I believe, when I think maybe the better path is for us to engage one another in conversation and be open to the possibility that maybe our ideas will change. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I want to do one more thing for you. I want to ask you a few questions about next semester. So first of all, the next semester, all of you are enrolled in IC1, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
Which is a class on human identity. So I'm curious, when you hear the topic of next semester's core class is human identity, what do you think you're going to be learning about?
I guess for me, human identity, it actually makes me kind of sit up and listen, because makes me kind of think, well, I'm going to learn more about myself. I'm going to learn more about my views. Even that kind of sounds weird, saying someone else is going to determine my views. But in a way, for me, it'll help me kind of understand everything that I'm trying to think about, just trying to figure out what God's plan for me is, because I still have no idea. Trying to figure out why we're here, which I have an idea, but I'm just still working it out. But hopefully, just learn about my identity, hopefully learn about others' identity, if they'll share it with me, just hopefully just grow as a bigger community and just kind of figure everything out.
Okay. Melissa?
Kind of makes me think of Bourne Identity a little bit. Well, just kind of like throughout all his movies, he's trying to figure out who he is, and he'll find little pieces throughout the movies that help put it together. And I kind of feel like that's what we'll be doing in the class. You'll like learn new things. You'll be like, oh, well, that's kind of like me. And throughout the whole semester, we'll be learning more things. And not necessarily by the end of the semester, but by the end of our time at college, we'll have a better understanding of who we are, and it'll start in human identity.
So. Mm-hmm. Good. Morgan?
Sorry. It makes me think that, this semester we talked all about our worldviews and decisions that we would make now, and maybe like learning more about ourselves, we would discover why we would make those decisions, and that's really interesting.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, I agree with her. I mean, we're all being kind of redundant and repetitive, but basically who we are, who others are, and how we work and stuff like that.
Uh-huh, good.
I'm a psychology major, so I've been taking Intro to Psych. And there are things where Dr. Beck will say something, and I identify with that, and I know this is why I maybe do something. And so I'm hoping that this class will also be something where we can identify with, like Alyssa was saying, and find more about who we are and why that is.
So let me throw a question at you, because this will be the kind of question we'll be wrestling with next semester. So all of you have talked about making decisions. Do you feel like, each of you individually, that you have freedom to make decisions for yourself about your life? Or do you feel like, in the end, ultimately, your decisions are constrained by things that are beyond your control? Like where you grew up, and your race and your gender. You know, those are all things that you didn't choose for yourself, right? You didn't choose the family that you were born into. You didn't choose to be born Caucasian or African American. You didn't choose to be born into the United States. So do you think that in the end, all of those things that you didn't choose for yourself, do those things kind of control ultimately the decisions that you make? Or do you have freedom to kind of transcend the things that are part of your life?
I think that's always, that things from our background are always going to influence us. But I think that we have the free will to choose our own actions. For example, I grew up in a Church of Christ home, and when I got here, I really wanted to venture out and just see everything that's out there. And so that's been interesting. And so I think that we have free will to change and not just conform with what we've done all of our life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Others?
Oh, me. Okay. I think yes and no, and it sounds kind of weird. Just like how you grew up and stuff. Like, I have a friend, and I go in her room just for like, and her room is like kind of messy. But then you come into my room, and it's all clean and stuff. And like, this is a day before our parents are coming to pick us up. And she's like, why is your room so clean? Why are you cleaning? Like, why are you frantic? Like, because my mother comes in here, she sees my room like this, she's going to get upset. It's just how I grew up. And I go back in there, and she's like, go in her room. And I'm like, okay, so why haven't you cleaned up? And she's like, well, you know, my mom really doesn't, you know, she really doesn't get mad about that. And she's kind of messy too. And so certain things, just like that small thing, like how you grew up. Yeah, it kind of does affect you. But at the same time, like, me growing up, coming to ACU and stuff like that, like, my parents didn't go to college, and I'm, like, the first student to, I mean, first kid to go to college. Like, I have free will to choose what I want to do. So it's, like, yes and no.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So. I agree with that. Going back to the messy thing, I mean, my parents are not the cleanest people either. And I've
They're
going
to be listening
up,
to this.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm used to having people over, and it's always the day of we're cleaning the house to get it ready, not, you know, it's already ready. And so I've always come into a messy family, but I've also, coming to college, I'm my new person. I'm my own person now, and so I'm keeping my room clean, which is amazing, and my parents are still amazed. But,
mine too.
You know, like, it's something where I had that influence, and I could choose to go back to being messy, but I've chosen to have the free will to stay clean.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mine's actually a little different, but I am kind of, I don't know, I say I'm kind of in the middle, but I don't really know. Like, for me growing up, I was never one of those, like, rebellious children. I was always kind of like a do what you're told, you won't get in trouble kind of people. But I have a lot of friends that are, like, more out there, and they're just kind of willing to do whatever just to kind of, like, feel happier in the moment. But they'll always come up to me and be like, why aren't you doing all this stuff? Why have you not decided to do this? And they're like, I tell them, I just don't see the point. I don't want to, like, spend all my life doing these things, and I still, at the end of the day, don't feel satisfied. And they're like, I respect that, and I wish I could be like that. And that's where I'm like, you have the free will. Like, I don't care I do care where you come from, but you still have the decision to be a different person. So, I don't know, that's just kind of where I am.
I know for me, I've struggled with this so much my entire life, because it's, just, I've had good things happen to me, bad things happen to me, and I've learned, and I try to look on the brighter side of things. But I know for me, it's, we have the free will to make the decision, but the outcome is totally all God. He has it planned from the beginning. And it sounds kind of contradictory to say we have free will, but He's already planned what our choice is going to be in advance. But I guess to us, it is free will, but we don't know what's going to unfold. So some kind of view it as, oh, well, this is the path that I made because I chose this. And my view is, well, you made the choice to take this path, but what happens on the path is all God. You can't control that, but you think you can control it. But I don't know, I'm still trying to figure it out, which is what I'm hoping I can figure out in human identity. So.
Eric anticipates one of the things you'll be looking at in IC1. If we say God is sovereign and that God has foreknowledge, that God knows what will happen, then are we really free to choose to do otherwise, right? Or, you know, how do we reconcile the idea of free will with the sovereignty of God? That's one of these deep theological questions.
I'm never going to find my answer.
Well, when you find the answer, then you will resolve a 2,000-year issue for the Christian tradition, right?
I'll write a book or something.
Yeah, and of course, the other even more grounded issue that we think about is when you look at examples of people who are victimizers, often we'll see it the case that people who victimize other people were themselves at one point in their lives victims of other people. Victimization has a tendency to perpetuate itself. And so if that's true, then what does that mean for moral responsibility if somebody's born into a family in which they have been victimized as a very young child? If that creates the circumstances where they themselves feel the need to victimize in a way, then are they really responsible for the things that they do if it was their own victimization that kind of created those conditions? Those are really deep questions, and philosophers, theologians wrestle with those a great deal. Those will be the kinds of questions that you'll get to look at. We'll also look at what role different features of our identity play in shaping our experience of the world. So thinking about race and the role that race plays in shaping our experience of the world around us, or gender, or the other things that constrain our experience of the world. So I know I'll be seeing a few of you in class next semester, but I don't know that I'll see all of you. But I want you to know that it has been a great pleasure having you as students in Cornerstone this year. And it also has been a great pleasure having you in the studio today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.